This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The State Ethics Commission is a small panel with a big job. The 8-member body handles everything from the financial statements of public officials to investigations into possible conflicts of interest. But a recent report gave North Carolina a C when it comes to ethics enforcement. The board has limited resources, and though they have received hundreds of ethics complaints, commissioners are not allowed to talk about any of them. John Elliston's an investigative reporter with the Carolina Public Press. He recently wrote an article about the strengths and weaknesses of our State Ethics Commission and joins us now. Welcome back to the State of Things, John.
Thank you, Frank.
Give us a little deeper description of the State Ethics Commission. What is it?
Well, think of it in two parts. There is this 8-member bipartisan commission that directs the operation of the professional staff, which is numbered at 13 right now. They have an annual budget of $1.2 million. And their job is to vet a whole host of ethical issues that might impact elected officials and other public employees.
And it is a whole host and a growing list. So you've got 13 staff members, 8 commissioners, and an awful lot of work. Give us a sense of the document load that they would receive in a year.
Well, on the one hand, they handle advisory opinions. That is, if a legislator or other public official wanted to get an opinion as to the propriety of a particular action, they can call the commission and get an opinion. Those opinions are confidential in virtually every case. And last year, the commission received 700 of those requests. In the same year, it received about 70 ethics complaints that it had to handle. And on top of that, the commission had to also vet about 6,600 statements of economic interest, which are documents that show potential conflicts of interest.
And those are required by the state for certain state employees. And that list, the list of employees or people who have to file those that kind of paperwork, is growing, right?
That's right. Just in the past year, the legislature mandated that the commission add 2 new categories of covered individuals for those filings. And so the workload on that front has grown by several hundred additional forms.
All right, so you've got this body. I can come to you if I'm a lawmaker and I wonder whether or not I can accept this gift under the law. I go to you and I get some advice, and that's one thing. On the other hand, I'm handling all this paperwork required by law. But the third one, and the one that might be most interesting to us, would be an ethics complaint. Someone who has gone to the commission and said, I think there's been a violation here. And give us an example, because we know about one of these complaints, Brian Turner and Tim Moffitt, that case. Tell us about it.
Yes, the case was of some interest here in Western North Carolina, where Representative Tim Moffitt, a state legislator, was the target of an ethics complaint by his challenger in the current election, who is Brian Turner. And it's a lengthy story. It's a he said about whether or not Moffitt asked Turner to drop out of the race and intimated that if Turner would do so, Moffitt might arrange a job for him at UNC-TV.
And as you said, this was the claim made by Brian Turner. He turns it over to the Ethics Commission. We wouldn't know about this had he not turned it over to the press as well. Brian Turner, that is, the documents.
Well, in this case, it was Moffitt that released the documents. We initially reported that Turner had released that complaint. In fact, no, Moffitt had. Turner did release an identical complaint he made to the State Board of Elections.
So tell us about this confidentiality, because this could have been a very serious matter. Well, actually, how is it resolved? Let's start there.
Sure. What ultimately happened was, after a kind of preliminary investigation, the commission decided to dismiss the complaint. In doing so, it said that it simply couldn't find evidence to prove that there was a violation. And indeed, there is no evidence other than the testimony of Brian Turner
about what Moffitt said to him, so the documentation isn't
yeah.
there. But that's an example of a case. But tell us about confidentiality and the inability of the commission to report on these cases.
We called the commission while it was conducting that investigation, and the executive director, Perry Newsom, brought me up to speed on the law. And that dictates that he can't talk about cases. And the same was true after the case was dismissed. I called in to see if I could get some more information, and he said he's legally prohibited from even acknowledging that the case existed.
Now, is that only in cases where the commission has decided to dismiss? Because you can understand accusations sometimes stick around a lot longer than the resolution, which says we find no culpability in this case.
In very rare cases, if I'm understanding your question, the complaints will be forwarded on for prosecution in two cases that we know of in the last seven and a half years.
And even in those cases, once it's been forwarded to a prosecutor, can the commission talk about what they've received?
No, they can't. Presumably those cases would have aired in the courts if they made it that far, but I just don't know.
All right. And so there's also another set of documents called Statements of Economic Interest, and we know about those recently. They were in the news with Governor McCrory's Statement of Economic Interest with respect to Duke Energy. So tell us about those.
Yeah, a close look at the governor's SEI filings, as we call them, indicated that he held on to Duke Energy stock longer than the forms would have indicated. At any rate, the documents are incredibly detailed queries into a politician's or certain other public servants' financial life, family ties, things they own, companies they've started, how much stock they have above a certain threshold in various companies. So it's a real window into their self-interest that helps us understand if it might clash with the public interest.
Let's take a look at the history of this group. This group, this particular commission was formed in 2006, but it's, and maybe we should talk about that. There were a number of corruption scandals that led to this, but it actually replaces another commission that had been in place for a while. So give us kind of the evolution of this particular commission.
Yes, post-Watergate, a lot of states instituted some form of an ethics board or commission. North Carolina followed suit in about 1977, I believe. And that was an office within the governor's wing that had a tiny staff, and often just one person, and had a limited mandate of looking after the ethics of the governor solely. After a series of corruption scandals in state government in the mid-2000s, the legislature moved and created this commission that would have a sort of ethical oversight of corruption in several branches of government.
All right. And so now this next iteration has a little more teeth and a little more scope, but as you said, I believe in your report, over 500 complaints, two of them were sent on to prosecutors. Now, that might mean we're a really clean state, but because we don't really know what was in those other complaints, it's hard for us to judge kind of the effect of this bipartisan commission.
It is hard to gauge. There's a little bit of hope for those who want to see more complaints pursued, and that is we found that over the years, the vast majority of complaints were dismissed outright because they didn't meet the proper criteria according to the commission. That's changed in the last 3 years. The number they accept to investigate is growing pretty substantially.
So at least they take it the next step. And so then the question is, well, is there any way to vet or tell how this commission is doing? And in fact, there was a national survey that compared all the states. Tell us about that.
It's telling to try to figure out how well our commission does to compare and contrast it with other states. And a consortium of media outlets did that in 2012. They gave our ethics enforcement agency a grade of C. It's not quite as bad as it sounds. We ranked 15th in the nation. In other words, most ethics boards ranked worse than North Carolina. But our commission was faulted not so much for its conduct, but for its capabilities, the fact that it's hamstrung by the very law that creates it.
And what are those restrictions?
Well, confidentiality is a huge one. There's a real tension and being an agency that's dedicated to increasing transparency and not being able to talk about key sectors of your work. In addition, they don't have a lot of authority to levy fines. Ethics education classes are required of all legislators and their staff and other public servants, but there are no penalties if you don't take those ethics classes.
And as you point out, the workload is increasing, and we're talking about 8 commissioners, 13 staff, right?
That's right. The director of the commission was very frank in saying that they're having to make do. They're not at 100%. They had huge backlogs in their first few years of operations. Those have receded, he said. But to get everything done, it's clear the commission would need more resources, more staff.
What else? You talked to Perry Newsom, the executive director, as you said. What else did he say about your report and about the national report that compared us to other states?
His reaction was, kind, and I hope honest. He wrote back this week to say that he thought it was a pretty good report. He helped me fix a couple of misspellings, which I always appreciate.
That's good. That's good. And of course, talked about the resources. Well, John, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Frank.
John Elliston is an investigative reporter for Carolina Public Press. He spoke with us from Asheville, and you can find out more about Carolina Public Press at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, More Than You Know, a mysterious novel about love, life, death. It's a journey, and we'll hear more about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.